Today on the Women Mind the Water Artivist series on womenmindthewater.com, I am speaking with Seth Greer. Seth is a Massachusetts-based musical artist who gets inspiration from the natural world. Seth says that the ocean brings him comfort and it provides a narrative for his music. He has worked as a producer, musical director, and studio musician, and collaborated with such renowned musical artists as Tom Rush, Nick Carter, and Cyndi Lauper. Seth has been nominated for a Grammy and is a 5-time Independent Music Award winner. The Women Mind the Water Artivist Series podcast on womenmindthewater.com engages artists in conversation about their work and explores their connection with the ocean. Through their stories, Women Mind the Water hopes to inspire and encourage action to protect the ocean and her creatures. I'm speaking with musical artist Seth Greer. Seth is an accomplished musician who's a 5-time Independent Music Award winner and has been nominated for a Grammy. Seth uses memories about the natural world to create his music. The songs on his latest album titled Everything include practical solutions for the climate crisis. His music reminds us that we have the ability to positively influence the world. Seth, welcome. I am grateful that you reached out to me about being on the Women Mind the Water Artivist Series podcast. The Women Mind the Water Artivist Series recently celebrated its 75th podcast. Your presence here is another milestone for us, this one attesting to our desire to be more inclusive. Through our stories, we wish to demonstrate that the world is an interdependent, non-binary ecosystem. So welcome, Seth. Let's explore how the world has influenced you and your music. Seth, I was once told by a music teacher that children make their selection of a musical instrument to learn how to play based on the instrument's sound quality and how it resonates with them. What was the first musical instrument you chose to play and why?
Yeah, great question. Well, Pam, thank you very much for making some time and allowing me to talk about my art and welcome me into your community. Thank you so much for what you're doing too. The first instrument that I really found a strong identity with was my voice as a singer. I remember being 12 and I was watching television with my uncle and aunt and saw a 13-year-old sing the national anthem before a Yankees game. And I thought to myself, well, I'm 12, but maybe eventually I'll be old enough to do that. Looking back on that, I was a loud kid. I didn't necessarily have the voice that I do now, but I loved what happened to my body when the whole thing was vibrating and full of air, and it was around that time where, as I was acculturating as a kid, I really learned that you could get adults' attention using your voice. And as the piano, which came first, and the guitar, which came second, they really still to this day act to me as almost more organizational tools of sort of separating one song from another. But for me, a song happens typically from the place where your voice just is sort of sprung into the air to call something, to say something.
I like that. And I like that the instruments are an accompaniment to your natural voice.
Yeah. They're like utensils. It's not the meal.
I like that. I like that. So when did you think music became the way for you to express yourself?
I think, well, I wrote my first song on September 11th, 2021. And I was in seventh grade. So that puts me, I'm 35 years old now. And
so wait a minute, in 2001, not 21.
Yes. No. In 2001. So the, I was, you know, I was in history class, about to watch a movie, and the teacher turned on the television, and we saw the second plane, and I watched, again, this was not something I really had a whole lot of intellectual understanding of at the time, but my dad, who was a day trader, I came back from school, and he was stressed out. Every adult was just acting weird. Of course, I understand why now, but what happened was that was where piano and songwriting kind of started from the same place. I was gifted this little Casio keyboard, not a full-size keyboard, but the ones
where
you play and the lights light up the keys. And so it's good for anyone who has, you know, ADDDDDD like me. And I ended up following the lights and finding four chords that felt like a container, and then started spilling my thoughts of the day. And so it was much more, was my kind of my first form of almost like journaling. But that's where it started, as a music being a self-navigational tool for me to understand what was alive in myself. And it wasn't until after that that I realized that there's the greater tool, which is really you tell your story so other people can hear their own.
So how do you go about choosing the sounds you feel that best express an experience?
I tend to be pretty literal at first. Sometimes that could be, you know, I've got this keyboard here called an OP1, which allows me, I can travel with it, and allows me to take a sample of a waterfall, mm-hmm. and then spread the waterfall out on the keyboard. So all of a sudden I could be playing chords that were droplets of water. Other times it can be wanting to create sort of an immersive feeling, like this song Somebody Break My Heart that I wrote about an experience with the ocean in Key West. I really wanted to feel like someone was being hugged by the water when you take a seat at the bottom of a pool and the pressure just is even around your entire body. I wanted that sense of suspension in the music. So sometimes that can be could be created by synthesizers and keyboards. Sometimes that can be achieved by layering my voice and doing all kinds of sort of studio production in that way.
Let's talk about one of your songs on the album, Everything. It's a song about Key West, Florida. So tell us what sort of story that you're trying to tell us and how you did that with the music.
One of my first interactions with water was through my relationship with my older brother, Jamie. So my brother was born with autism and lived his life without the ability to speak. For much of my teenage years, I was his personal care attendant and would wake him up in the morning. And for much of my early 20s, I became his legal guardian for a period of time. So we would go swimming all the time, whether it was a lake or a pool. He was a water baby. And part of his day program was swimming in the pool for sort of sensory integration. But he passed away about 7 years ago. And in his passing, I went down to Key West for a writing residency. I found this amazing picnic table, sort of at about 20 feet from the water at Fort Zachary Taylor State Park. And I would start each morning trying to figure out what the rest of my life without my brother in it was going to look like. And I would work myself up into such an emotion every 40 minutes or so while typing that I could no longer see the screen in front of me, and my eyes would just sort of well up with tears. And then I would run into the water and rinse and repeat. And I did that pretty much exclusively for 2 weeks. And I left Key West with a completely changed relationship with water. I could no longer tell where my tears started and where the water began. And then there was this cleaning out that I felt almost like a baptism. But every time I visit the water again, it's like I get a little bit of my brother back. I wrote that song. I wrote Somebody Break My Heart to try to capture that feeling. And it was a particular kind of water. But it was sort of a feeling of like numbness, pleading for emotion, for feeling to come in. And water was a huge aspect of the sort of sound bed of that song.
You also, on that same album, has this song about Fire Island, which I had to look up, shame on me. And I found out it's a barrier island off the southern shore of New York.
Yeah.
Now, New York and Key West seem like they're worlds apart. Now, I don't know what the story was that you were trying to tell about Fire Island, but the two songs, I imagine, are different.
Yes.
So how do you go about creating those different vibes?
Oh, interesting. Great question. Yes, they're different. They're completely different ecologies, right? The natural thing is to make sure that the accoutrement around them, the production around these songs, sort of matches the those differences. Somebody Break My Heart is very much of this sort of lulling, meditative expression where it's pulling you in. And that was very much what was going on inside of me, which is I was reconnecting with a family member through this natural element.
Right.
With the song Witches of the Wind, that you know, I went to Fire Island as a kid, surf cast fishing with my dad. We'd go for bluefish and striped bass, and it was one of my favorite memories as a child. It was one of the favorite memories of my dad. I wanted to build a 3-minute snapshot of a climate-oriented solution that had a lot of intersectional solutions working at it. So things like floating solar panels in the shipyard, things like viable commercial kelp farming, not only to protect the coastline, but to protect, you know, the planet and to protect us. And so I decided to create all of these solutions through a story song about a father and a child going off not to go fishing, but going off to visit the offshore wind, and making sure that the journey out from the harbor was brimming with all of the positive potential that I believe needs to be infused back into the climate movement.
It's a really unusual angle to take. I mean, because climate solutions and the climate crisis are a big idea, and they're complex and difficult to solve. And you take it back to the relationship between a father and a son, mm-hmm. so that the issue is not so big and undaunting. It's so personal and affectionate.
Mm.
Now, in terms of the music, how big or little is it that you can express? So it's your voice, it's expressing solutions, but how does the music support that?
The music has a lot more it propels you, you know, literally like a windmill. The ocean is different there. It has a jaggedness to the edges of the sounds. All of these things, you know, make up the shoreline. But to your original point, I personally really think that the bigger the idea, the smaller the doorway into it needs to be. You know, it's like that with so many things that we feel overwhelmed and powerless about.
Right.
You know, in a way, it's like neither one of us can hold the ocean, but we collect shells. You know, I see like the starfish behind you.
Right.
We're taking small momentums to sort of souvenirs to remind us of this greater thing that can't really be intellectualized.
So Seth, you've worked with some remarkable people and you've had amazing opportunities to collaborate with musicians from across the globe because you worked as a cultural diplomat for the US State Department. What have you learned about music from working across cultural and geographic boundaries?
I have been so lucky to travel the world and communicate and connect with musicians all over the map. What I have learned is that music's an empathy machine. It's impossible to be playing music with another person without being changed by it. And in my experience, it works faster than just about everything else I've seen. It works certainly faster than language. It works faster than touch. There is so much trust that gets built in playing music with someone and you don't know where it's going to go, and it arrives someplace that neither one of you guys could imagine. That happens all the time. It's happened with, you know, singing, doing Tuvan throat singing in Mongolia. It's happened in every kind of genre, so that's totally an arbitrary categorization of music. But I feel incredibly lucky to be a part of that empathy machine.
So before we end, I'd like to ask you, as I do with all my guests, to speak to our listeners about how they might make a difference. How might they use their voices to speak up for the ocean?
Everyone is finding their own journey to engagement and sustainable activism, and incorporating rest, which is a really important part of all of this. For me, nothing gets me more inspired and hopeful than the citizen science efforts. To me, have been some of the most exciting things to be a part of.
Well, I really want to thank you again for joining me on the Women Mind the Water Artivist Series podcast to talk about your music and nature and particularly the ocean. I'd like to remind listeners that I've been speaking with Seth Clear, an accomplished musician whose songs about nature remind us that we have the ability to positively influence the world around us. Seth is the latest guest on the Women Mind the Water Artivist Series podcast. The series can be viewed on womenmindthewater.com, Museum on Main Street, and YouTube. An audio-only version of this podcast is available on womenmindthewater.com, on iTunes, and Spotify. Women Mind the Water is grateful to Jane Rice for the use of her song, Women of Water. All rights for the Women Mind the Water name and logo belong to Pam Ferris Olson. This is Pam Ferris Olson.